Welcome to Up to Date. I'm Steve Kraske. Chances are you drive by a World War I monument in Kansas City and have no idea what it represents or that it's even there. Today we set out to correct that with a mini tour of these memorials and the incredible stories behind them. But first today, a look at the Democratic Party through the eyes of one of its modern architects. L. Fromm founded the Democratic Leadership Council in the mid-1980s as the party was suffering a devastating dry spell. 8 years later, Bill Clinton broke the drought by running for the White House and winning as a new Democrat. One of the basic underpinnings of the movement is the idea that opportunity and responsibility go hand in hand. L. Fromm has a new book out, The New Democrats and the Return to Power, and yesterday he presented the Dole Lecture at KU. President Clinton has said of him that he's hard-pressed to think of a single American who, as a private citizen, has had a more positive impact on the progress of American life in the last 25 years. L. Fromm, welcome to Kansas City. So good to have you here.
I'm delighted to be back in Kansas City.
Well, take us back to the 1980s, Al, when you founded the Democratic Leadership Council. You say the Democrats spent the 1980s wandering in the political wilderness. Why were they wandering, and just how bad was it?
Well, it was very bad.
Yes, it was.
We suffered the worst three elections in terms of the Electoral College vote of any party in the history of American politics in
Wow.
three consecutive elections.
Yeah.
Parties started in 1828. The modern party, and never did a party win a lower percentage of electoral votes in three elections in a row than we did in the 1980s. So we were out in the wilderness. Basically, what had happened is the New Deal coalition of Franklin Roosevelt had run its course. We were in part victims of our own success, but over the 70s and into the 80s, really, beginning with Vietnam, we lost credibility on the two issues that more than anything else drive politics. One was the economy, and the other is national security.
Absolutely.
People lost yeah. faith in our ability to govern the country. There were other things as well. I mean, in some things that happened that were good for the country and good for the Democratic Party, in the short term turned out to be to cost us support, like civil rights. We lost the South over the civil rights movement.
Which LBJ predicted the day he signed the bill.
That's right. Mm-hmm. You know, this was the 50th anniversary. This is the 50th anniversary of the civil rights bills. End of the war on poverty. I got my start in the war on poverty, and you mentioned the themes of opportunity and responsibility. I believe that is America's basic bargain. Basically, the country offers individuals the opportunity, freedom to get ahead, and individuals have an obligation both to take advantage of that opportunity and to give something back to the Commonwealth. I learned that working for LBJ's War on Poverty, which we won't go into a long discussion of that, but I believe was a great success and an empowerment and not a welfare program.
Yeah. Well, let's flip a coin here. So what were the Republicans doing so right in the 1980s that made them ascendant at that point?
I'm not sure they were doing anything so right,
mm-hmm.
but the Democrats really had run out of ideas. In fairness, whether you agreed with him or not, Ronald Reagan had run on an agenda. It was an agenda that I, when I was at that time head of the House Democratic Caucus,
mm-hmm.
Or staff director of it, we opposed. But Reagan had run on an agenda. It was the era of Jack Kemp and Bill Roth and a bunch of new Republican tax ideas. And what they did right was they seized the idea initiative. Now, we would argue their ideas weren't the right ones, but we didn't offer anything. We were mm-hmm. basically, out of ideas, out of power and out of touch.
And some say the Republican Party today is in the same position the Democrats were back then, just opposing, not really offering a bunch of brand new ideas. At least you hear that from critics.
Well, I think that's right. But, you know, today politics is a little bit different than it was back
Boy.
Then.
Yeah.
Even though there are a lot of parallels, but the Republicans are going into a midterm, and there's a story in USA Today, I guess on a Pew poll, that says they're going to have one of the most successful midterms ever.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't read it very carefully, but the headlines indicated that. And they're going to do probably well because there's a great gulf today between what I'd call national or presidential politics and congressional politics. The way the districts are drawn, one of the reasons Republicans can do well this fall is because even in 2012, Democrats won 1.7 million more votes for Congress nationally than the Republicans. But the districts are so gerrymandered that the Republicans have a majority. And just the constitutional breakdown of the states, where mm-hmm. each state has two senators, because there's so many more small states and Democrats get a big vote out of the bigger states, gives the president or the Republicans advantage in the Senate. But in the Republicans in presidential politics are very much moving toward the circumstances that we were in the 1980s.
So what else, Al, is holding back the Democrats in these midterm elections? I mean, you mentioned the gerrymandering thing, but that certainly isn't the entire explanation, is it?
Well, there's in midterm elections, probably the single most important indicator is the president's approval rating.
And it ain't good right now.
Whether it's fair or not, President Obama has a low approval rating. If it comes up 2 or 3 points, if, for example, the jobs report on Friday turns out to be a predictor of what's going to happen this summer, the losses will probably be less. I think also the Senate, a third of the Senate's elected every year, and it depends where the vulnerable seats are. And this year, the Democratic seats that are up, like in North Carolina, Arkansas, Louisiana, mm-hmm. Alaska, Montana, South Dakota are in states that normally would favor the Republicans.
Yeah. We're visiting with Al Fromm. He founded the Democratic Leadership Council back in the mid-1980s that began to turn the party around. Let's go back to that time, Al. What was the tipping point for the Democrats? I mean, what was the single one thing that set you off and made you say, we have got to turn this ship around?
Well, I start my book with an anecdote, which is really the beginning of it. I said on election night 1980, I held a party and nobody came. what had happened, I was working in the Carter White House. Most of my friends were either working for Democrats in the U.S. Senate or a few were working for my home congressman at the time, who was the whip of the House, John Bradamus of mm-hmm. Indiana. Mm-hmm. And every one of them had lost. We lost the White House. I lost my job. People working for my friends in the Democratic Senate lost their jobs. And we lost 33 seats in the House. A lot of people in the House lost theirs. So that was really, to me, the beginning. And then working with the Missourian, my friend Dick Gebhardt, mm-hmm. who's a college mm-hmm. friend of mine, when he was in the House, I became head of the House Democratic Caucus, and we began the effort to rebuild the party really in the caucus. It was a group of young members from all over the country who were afraid if we didn't do something about the Democratic Party, they wouldn't survive. Mm-hmm. And that was really the impetus. But we had two other really important things that happened. One was, when you lose 49 states like we did in 1984, that's by anybody's measure, a market failure. Mm-hmm. People aren't buying what you're selling. Mm-hmm. And that was the second time in four elections we had lost 49 states. And that was, and the fact that I was moving out of the caucus was an impetus to actually start the DLC. We decided to get together with some senators and governors, including Bill Clinton, to form an organization that was dedicated to rebuilding the party. So that was a second major point. But probably the thing that gave us the credibility to actually lead a revolution in the party was the 1988 election. Mm-hmm. That was an election.
The election Democrats were supposed to win.
Yeah, well, that's the point. Mm-hmm. We came out of Atlanta and with a 17-point lead. Governor Dukakis was a candidate. And when we lost that election, and the pattern, really the same pattern as we had lost. I mean, we lost 44 states in 1980, 49, and 1984. And, you know, Dukakis ran a good race. He only lost 40 states.
But who's counting?
Yeah, yeah. Right. you know, so I think that basically opened the door for us to come in. And the other thing that was important about it is Governor Dukakis, a good man, and clearly was sort of a transition candidate in the sense he wasn't an old interest group New Deal liberal.
Mm-hmm.
But he never defined himself, and the Republicans defined him. And we decided, as that election was going on and right after it, that it was really important for Democrats to develop an agenda that a candidate could take and win the White House with. And that was the impetus. We decided to draft that agenda. And then in April of 1989, which was right after that election, I went down to Little Rock and asked Bill Clinton to become chairman of the DLC, and he agreed, and sort of the rest is history.
You were off and running. Right. And so the DLC, the Democratic Leadership Council, it did what, Al? What was it about the DLC that differentiated itself from where Democrats had been in just two or three points?
Well, the Democratic Leadership Council was a unique thing in politics. It was an idea action center. It wasn't just a think tank that developed ideas, because its membership were elected, was elected officials. So you actually had the people who were proposing the policies could try to put them into action and inject them in the political debate. How did we differ? First, we believed, as Democrats always have, that opportunity for all is sort of our animating principle, but we believe that private sector economic growth was critical for opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
Second, we believe that we had to restore Kennedy's ethic of civic responsibility, the idea that of reciprocity. You had to give something back to the country. We sort of lost that, I'd say, in the 1970s. The third, we really focused on Roosevelt's, what I think was Roosevelt's greatest legacy, innovation. You know, Roosevelt, in what I think was his best speech ever to the Commonwealth Club in San Francisco in 1932, said new conditions impose new requirements on government and those who conduct government, and he called for bold, persistent experimentation. And so we tried to modernize government. And for whatever reason, a lot of liberal Democrats are nervous about that. To me, it's the most fundamental thing, because we believe in government.
Mm-hmm.
And so you want government to work well so people have faith in it. And but if you think that if every time you want to reform government, you're undermining your progressive goals, then you won't reform government. People lose faith in it, and you won't be able to do anything. So that was the third thing. We also took a very internationalist point of view, sort of getting beyond the Vietnam syndrome.
Al, as you went down to Little Rock in 1989, you know, you've just lost the third election in a row. You're getting buried. What led you to a man named Bill Clinton? What was it about Clinton that had you hooking up with him at that point and thinking he's the guy we got to have?
Well, I got to know Clinton really pretty well in 1987 and 1988.
When he's the governor of Arkansas.
When he's governor of Arkansas. Mm-hmm. He came to the DLC conferences, and I'd never seen a politician like him. One, he just he had sort of seductive appeal to anybody in the room, and
yes, he did.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
And but he understood ideas better than any politician I've ever heard. He knew how
it's
to.
It's the intellectual capacity, right. The intellectual firepower that sometimes still gets overlooked a little bit.
He had both the political and intellectual skill. And the other thing about Bill Clinton that attracted him to me is he always said to me, and he said in his inaugural address in New Orleans in 1990, when he took over the chairmanship, he said the intellectual resurgence of the party had to precede its political resurgence.
Yeah.
Because he understood that if you don't stand for good ideas, if you don't stand for things people want to support, they're not going to support you.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that was different than most of the candidates. And most people in our party who believed we lost because Ronald Reagan was a good candidate, we lost because the people didn't understand our message, all those things. That wasn't right. We lost because people lost faith in our ability to govern and to manage the economy and defend the country.
Did you see him back in 1990 and then moving forward, Al, as the next president of the United States? Was he the guy in your mind at that point?
Absolutely.
He was.
You know, inside the DLC, there were a lot of people who supported Sam Nunn, the senator mm-hmm. from Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
But when I went down to recruit Clinton to be chairman, I said to him, you know, I got this deal for you. We'll pay for your travel around the country. We'll work on an agenda that you can that can elect a Democrat as a president, and I think you'll be president someday, and we'll both be important. And he said, "Okay, I'll take that deal." I've seen a lot of politicians, a lot of great politicians, a lot of great statesmen.
Yeah.
There's just something about some of them,
mm-hmm.
And very few.
You can spot them pretty quickly.
But there's another interesting thing about Clinton. I mean, I mentioned Reagan before. In sort of my adult lifetime, post-Vietnam anyway, the two presidents that stand out in my mind as being the best presidents are Reagan and Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
And they had something in common. One, they had incredible political skill. But the second thing is they both ran on idea agendas.
Hmm.
And Clinton, you know, we traveled around the country. I was in 26 states. I think I was probably here. I think I met with you in the
you did.
The Star Editorial Board. But Clinton and I were in 26 states together. And all we did was talk about ideas. We didn't raise money. We should have. We need probably could have. But
hindsight's 2020. Yeah,
we really didn't do any organizing any real way. We sort of got a few elected officials together and introduced them to the DLC. But basically, we talked about ideas. And so when he ran, when he announced on October 3rd, 1991, he had an agenda to run on. He had the themes. We had a big conference in Cleveland in May of 1991 where we introduced the three themes that would be the themes that Clinton used to this day, opportunity,
yeah.
responsibility, and community.
Yeah. That's such an interesting set of words because, you know, one of the things that separated the New Democrats from what we had known heretofore at that point anyway was this notion of welfare reform,
right.
and what needed to happen there, that this notion that Democrats at that time were seen as being all about handouts.
Mm-hmm.
And, a couple of things here. What was this the single most important idea of the New Democrats? And what did you want to do exactly with that?
Well, I think welfare was the single most defining issue
yeah.
of the New Democrat movement. And when you're out in the wilderness and people don't trust you to run the government and they believe you're going to work against their economic interests, it's hard to get them to even look at you.
Mm-hmm.
The reason welfare reform was a critical issue in the Clinton campaign, and I believe incredibly good for the country, was that was the issue that told people we're different than mm-hmm. the old Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
Once
yeah. It's a new day. Yeah.
You know, once they said, well, this guy doesn't want to, you know, he wants to, help people who work, and he doesn't want to take money away from people who work to give it to people who don't work. Maybe we ought to look at some other ideas, and then they would look at the whole program, and they liked his economic ideas, and they liked a lot of other things about his agenda. But the thing about welfare was really important. Welfare was a debilitating system. But our principle was that nobody who works full time year round to support a family in the United States ought to be poor. And so before we could do welfare reform, we had to make work more valuable than welfare.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why welfare was sort of the bookend with the earned income tax credit that we passed in 1993, which was the biggest anti-poverty program in the history of the country, at least to that point, and I think it still is. So then, with work being more valuable than welfare, we could say to people, you know, if you can work, you have to work. Mm-hmm. It's not, welfare is a second chance, in his words, not a way of life. Mm-hmm. And that was very important. The outcomes were even more important. I mean, everybody knows Clinton created 22.5 million new jobs, and it was the what they may not know is that incomes went up for every quintile in the economy, and incomes, an average incomes went up at a higher percentage for the lowest quintile than for the highest.
Wow.
With all this talk about inequality, we moved 7.7 million people out of poverty. I think it was 8 million people from welfare to work. But the 7.7 million was more than in any decade except the 1960s. And the only other president, modern president, who has had moved people out of poverty was Reagan, and we moved 100 times more than Reagan did.
Well, what's happened since then? Because you get a sense today, Al, that this old adage of if you work full-time, you don't have to be in poverty. Well, in this country today, you work full-time, you can still be in poverty.
Yeah, I think that's one of the biggest problems that we face the country.
Yeah,
I mean, it seems to me that what happened, interestingly enough, is when Clinton left office, median family income was the highest it's ever been before and since.
Mm-hmm.
And what's happened in the last 14 years is that the inequality in incomes has really increased. Now, I'm not an expert on all the numbers, but I talked to Rob Shapiro, who was a former Undersecretary of Commerce, used to run all those agencies that do the numbers. And Shapiro was my economist at the DLC in the 1980s, mm-hmm. late 80s and early 90s. And what he said is that there was a turning point, and it's going that now it's, you know, inequality has really become very grave. And the problem is that if everybody doesn't participate in the economy, the other thing that's happening is the percentage of people who are working is going down.
Mm-hmm.
We had a good job creation number, but we also lost a lot of people in the workforce and have. Our belief is that the economic growth and prosperity depends on the contributions of all of us. And if fewer people are making contributions and mm-hmm. some are not doing well, that hurts future growth. It also rips at the social fabric of the country.
Yeah.
It's hard to keep a country together.
Al Fromm is our guest. His new book, The New Democrats and the Return to Power. He's the founder of the Democratic Leadership Council. You know, you don't talk in this book a lot about a man familiar to everybody, Barack Obama. Why not?
I made a decision when I was going to write the book that I was going to do it mostly about a defined period. As somebody who writes, you understand this. You write mm-hmm. printed stuff.
Yeah.
It's hard to write a book that is timely about something that's going on now.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you'll remember in the last year, Jeb Bush wrote a book, when he wrote his stuff on immigration in his book, he was ahead of the curve. By the time it came out, he was behind the curve.
Yeah.
So I made a judgment that for me, the important part of the story was there were two things that were most important:
the history and the movement of New Democratic.
The first was that memories are too short, and because now Democrats have a demographic advantage in presidential elections, we forget how tenuous that could be, mm-hmm. and what a short period ago we were really in the political wilderness. The second is what we've been talking about, is that ideas matter in politics.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, in all the, you know, your business, your other business in as a political reporter, you see this. I mean, there's so much emphasis in politics on how you deliver a message, how do you get the people who agree with you, all this kind mm-hmm. of stuff. People forget that you got to have ideas that are going to drive the country forward, that are in the national interest. So I did it for that reason. Now, there are lessons that can go forward, but I didn't really want to do a commentary on President Obama. The book on President Obama is not written.
Do you regard him as a new Democrat, Al?
You know, today I think I mean, I think President Obama is, I don't know, he would accept the label of a New Democrat. He once said he was. the party has so fundamentally changed that I think it's hard to apply the 1990s labels to today. But what I was going to say about Obama, and I think this is important, especially in this region, because you have my friend Kathleen Sebelius, who's is just leaving as HHS secretary, and healthcare is a big issue, Obamacare. I mean, if you ever want to know, I mean, the book is not written, and Obamacare is the best example. It got off to an awful start, and nobody can.
As the president acknowledged at the White House Correspondents' Dinner Saturday night.
Nobody can argue that. And the launch was terrible. But over the long haul, it's probably going to turn out to be a positive. Mm-hmm. The long haul may be 5 years from now. It's certainly not going to probably...
A positive in terms of policy and politics?
Well, I think yes, in a sense. I mean, think about President Bush in the prescription drug program. Most people now think it's a pretty good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the Republicans have a little trouble because in embracing it. But Democrats, if Obamacare works as I hope it will, over the long haul, I don't think we'll have any trouble embracing it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sure that I'm not old enough to at least have been politically aware when Medicare started, but I'm sure there were some bumps along the way there. There always are, a big program. But now people, grab that Medicare. I mean, the greatest thing that ever happens to anybody who does what I used to do anyway is you go out and you're talking to people and they say, now don't let the government, cut my Medicare.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Yeah. Well, what about Hillary Clinton? Right. Is she walking in her husband's footsteps in terms of being a new Democrat herself? And are you involved in her shaping a policy agenda going forward?
I'm not. I haven't really worked. I'm not part of all these groups that are working on Hillary's campaign or preparing for Hillary campaign. Hillary, I'll do whatever Hillary asks. Mm-hmm. She's my friend. We traveled the country, or the world together because when we did Third Way, which was basically New Democrat ideas, discussions with Tony Blair and other world leaders, Hillary led most of those.
Mm-hmm.
I believe if she runs, she will embody the same fundamental principles that Clinton did, of opportunity, responsibility, community. I think she will be an internationalist. She believes in a strong United States in the world. Now, will her policies be the same? Probably not, because mm-hmm. they're different challenges.
Yeah.
I'm not in that policy business as much as I used to be.
Yeah.
I'll leave it to the experts to define the policies. But I think the general messages of the campaign and her administration, when she's elected, will follow the course of the Clinton administration.
L. Fromm is the founder of the Democratic Leadership Council. His new book is The New Democrats and the Return to Power. L., always good to have you here. Thanks for taking some time and visiting with us today.
I'm delighted to do it. I love to come out here to Kansas City. Last year, I came out with the Washington Nationals, and I actually got a ball game in on my trip this time.
Well, you know what? The Royals are struggling right now with the three-game series sweep from the Tigers. Not a good weekend for the boys in blue. Al, good to have you. Thanks again.
Thanks for having me.